Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hello all, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu from Rusty Quill Gaming and the host and director of Enthusiasm. Today, I'm here to tell you about The Program. The Program audio series is a science fiction anthology podcast set in a world where money, state, and God are fused into a single entity. Every episode is a standalone story featuring ordinary people inhabiting this extraordinary world. And for them, it's not the future that is terrifying, but our present. The Program is sometimes funny, sometimes poignant, but it is always smart. Find out more about The Program at www.rustyquill.com or www.programaudioseries.com or search for The Program Audio Series wherever you listen to your podcasts. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to our ongoing special edition of Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. We're in part two of our post-apocalyptic, Mad Matt-esque, rat-infested, cult-leadered, lock-and-coiled and loaded and ready to shoot, snappy gun cyber techno shaman adventure.
Whew. And there's a mutant.
It's so much. It's so dense. But yeah, if you haven't already, listen to part one. Otherwise, nothing will make.
And it's a struggle anyway, to be honest.
And I think we're going to pick up where we left off. So I believe, James, we're on to yours.
Yep. So the mutant, Nut McKenna. Describe the scene as you plant a bomb. Nut McKenna strolls through the marketplace. Shambles as elegantly as you can possibly imagine. Some of his more bulbous and lagging tumours bumping behind him like a faithful puppy. You can't feel, of course. One of the advantages of having tumours in your nerve endings is that you are incapable of feeling anything on that side of his body. But he struggles through carrying one of those highly prized articles, a family heirloom passed down to him from his father, before him. An old Sainsbury's bag for life. In the bag for life, there is, you gently hear other people around the marketplace, could hear, if they had a mind to, they strain their ears, a little bit of an old school style ticking.
An old Sainsbury's bomb.
A bomb for life.
It is a taste the difference bomb. It is not a basics bomb. It is very well made. It is
golden purple.
Yep. It looks a lot. It is the Fabergé egg of bombs. This is a bomb that Nut McKenna has spent an awful long time at. He's sculpted it finely out of all the finest pieces you can imagine. It's mostly made out of broken glass and lead piping and he harvested and produced the saltpeter himself with the greatest possible relish. And Nut McKenna strides Emma through, and nobody wants to look at him, which is one of the best ways of encouraging a stealthy reaction in this kind of moment. It's been so hideous that if people think you're looking shifty, they're like, nah, I could look at you and examine what you're doing, but that would involve looking at you for too long. So he strides over to an aggregated mound of waste in the corner. It is mostly discarded, rusted up nuts and bolts, shrapnel, etc. And gradually, quietly, surreptitiously jiggles the bomb out, nestles it into a little huddle, ooh, and covers it up like a turtle might its head. Oh. Choose which of these three will now feature in the scene. A mutant tentacle monster, cannibals, or a deactivated atom bomb.
Yes!
Nutskeller is not the brightest of gentlemen. Though he may have a lovely speaking voice, he does not have a lovely thinking brain. Finish narrating the mutant scene, incorporating a deactivated atom bomb.
So, Nut McKenna, like parts of his body flopping as he reaches through the pile, discovers genuinely for the first time an undetonated nuclear weapon.
Underneath the waste.
And he was just going to put the bomb.
It's a really good place to put a bomb.
And then,
someone else has tried.
And then he sees the radiation symbol and a vague memory from his past. Something as a child that may have been over his crib. But it doesn't quite. He's just like, what a nice pattern. And then decides to place the bomb square in the middle of the radiation warning.
It's got a skull and crossbones. I like pirates.
doesn't quite twig, so he just goes, ooh, that'll make a good,
yellow
solid
leverage.
Yellow
has always been my favourite colour.
And he places the bomb there.
The bomb's timer is ticking down from 3 hours, and he goes over the marketplace and sits safely outside the blast radius of the bomb, looking very smug. Drinking a coffee.
Not realising that on the other side of town, his father's home is being currently assaulted by mole people.
Yeah.
Great.
Describe the scene as I eliminate the religious cult. Well, apparently my work is already being unfolding. But the scientist is in his lab. His recently hatched egg has contained one of the most venomous snakes he's ever encountered.
Oh, congratulations.
A species he can't even... He doesn't even recognise, but he knows from his study of other snakes that this is a highly venomous one. He's been harvesting the venom and injecting it into cans of lemonade. Because he knows the group are in the desert and he's going to hand deliver them a crate of lemonade cans to quench their thirst.
Nice.
And help them overcome the sunshine.
If life gives you venom, make venom.
Yeah! Brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah.
So that, let's make that a flashback.
Yes, so he's now exiting his lab, carrying a crate of lovely lemonade, and he's heading out. He knew the plan was for the cult to come to town today, so he's carrying this crate of lemonade. He's going to deliver it as they arrive as a welcome to the town gift. Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. A drag race, which I like to assume is of the RuPaul kind. quicksand or improvised explosives.
It's right itself.
They're all so good. I'm going with it. I'm choosing a drag race. Ask the group. Finish narrating the scientist scene, incorporating a drag race.
The cultists that are left have all been sort of taking clothes from each other. Maybe the only people that survived were the one that had a sturdy male constitution, but the relatively light dresses.
You must be this flamboyant.
So it's only the super burly hench guys in women's chiffon dresses.
And they're racing towards town to find refreshments. Yeah.
they're extraordinarily beautiful individuals. Sculpted muscles, but elegant contours.
And as they pull each other along the dusty ground, dragging, if you will. They spot a lemonade seller on the horizon.
Yes, this is a race of unusual people. They take their lemonade and they drink deeply of it. And they all fall to the ground, twitching, convulsing and vomiting. And the eyes of the cult leader and the scientist meet over a pile of... over an unfortunate pile of dead bodies.
Really exquisite dead body.
He's looking fabulous.
Just amazing.
There's no prejudice in my character. I wanted to kill everyone equally. It's just not my... It's not my fault that the only ones who survived make me look like a horrible person.
And so it is that a great rivalry begins.
I will end you.
Lemonade?
Describe the scene as you steal a flamethrower. Well, I'm coming into town dragging the robot on a leash. it's trying to work. It keeps asking me if I require my corridors to be vacuumed today and what I would like for dinner. But as I'm going along, Snappy is whispering to me, well, don't think that I look pretty. Don't you think that I look pretty with some of that glistening flame? I know that you love me if you give me a flamethrower. I don't know. Do you care? Do you really care about me? Haven't we been fighting together for so long? Really, if you love me, you'd find me some flames. And I'm like, I do love you, Snappy. I do. I really like you to be bathed in flames. Beautiful flame. So, yes, I will find this for you as I walk into town, muttering to myself. And
passing a pile of bodies.
Seeing the guards of the town. It's like, we're a bit busy today. peremptory checks. Is that robot a killing robot? You're like, I don't know. I'm trying to find that out. Do you know anyone that might be able to help me? Yeah, I need flames. And then the guards just don't care. Mole people come up behind them and slit their throats.
That's why they don't care.
Yeah. I walk through talking to myself. I see a person with a flamethrower trying to fight off mole people.
What are the guards?
I want that. Yeah, I just take it from their bodies. Like, that's how they're guarding the front of the thing. Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. Travelling soldiers, a dirty fist fight, or an artillery gang. So I think that I'm going to add an artillery gang to that mix. So finish narrating my scene, incorporating an artillery gang.
Can we tie them into anything that's already
there? Are they mole people?
Oh, so the mole people, having taken some of the technology from their apparent underground city, which the tech shaman is obsessed with,
then.
Basically have been working their way through, and then reveal from hidden spider holes, they just pull back tarpaulins, revealing genuine old world artillery that they've modified and upgraded. And as their attack against the wall turns against them, and their numbers are just not quite enough, they fire their first artillery round, which plows through the watchtower, which crumbles inwards, and the man who first cried mole is now vanquished, and a hole appears in their defences, and the shot having been taken, the mole people surge forward to the gap.
Locke realises that this conflict, whichever way it gets resolved, if she wants to acquire what she needs in this town, she's going to have to join the winning side. And with her powerful shotgun and new flamethrower, she might be able to swing the battle in either direction.
Ooh. This sounds very perceptive for me.
What needs most cleansing?
Yeah. I think the mole people, they scuttle along and try and pull the flamethrower out of my hands. I'm like, no, I want my flamethrower, it's for Snappy. You don't understand. He needs a flamethrower. What's wrong? I'm gonna purify you! Why are you on
Dead mole people all around the square. Right. New round, back to the tech shaman. Narrate a scene in which you keep going because you want to earn the traitor's support for your leadership election.
Slaying about some security issues, I think.
You've initiated the attack, so you get to deal with other things while the battle's going on.
I am an emissary of the mole people. And while they're turning over the current system, it's my job to gain the support of the people so that they're not, they don't feel that we've offended them or in overhauling their current leadership.
Overhauling?
Yeah, yes. So it is, I go out.
In the background,
in the middle of the square, Regina takes to her soapbox, holding her staff above her head,
crash,
and shouts, "People of Hubtown,
I'm on fire!
The mole people are our saviors. No longer. Crumble. And as she says this, she spears a rat with her pole. Need we be afraid of these rats? No longer need you be exiled. If you fail in your duties, the mole people have great resources of power and tanks. And a small crowd gathers around her, listening to her now, because she's clearly not insane anymore. She's got some evidence for once. Which of these will now feature in the scene? Somebody reveals that they are in a religious cult, an oil tanker, or the biker gang. I'm going to go with the religious cult. Finish narrating the text, Shaman scene, as someone reveals they're in the religious cult.
So, as the crowd grows around the text, Shaman, one unusually well-dressed individual steps forward, slowly pushing their way through the crowd further and further till they pluck from inside themselves a homemade pepper pot pistol and scream, "For the souffles!" and takes the shot at the tech shaman.
It's like pluck from inside themselves, yeah. Not in their coat, themselves. We won't go into that, but just,
it's
you know.
It's an armpit. It's an armpit holster. That's yeah. What
nice.
Meant.
Nice, okay.
Narrate a scene in which you keep going because you want to find a good place to scavenge technology. So
your job is to take the war to the mole people and claim their technology for yourself.
So the cult leader shuffling through the desert, seeing the blast as the artillery shell goes off and seeing the clouds of dust and smoke and spurts of flame of all things 30 foot high as some kind of struggle is going on at the gate, reconsiders the decision to make this new civilization in Hubtown. And looking at what's left of his congregation, namely no one, alone in the desert wastes, turns to where the mole people have been coming and goes, I believe I may have a plan, and begins shuffling towards the mole people, towards specifically the spider hole that he saw revealed, in the hopes of perhaps garnering some new technology which he could use to re-enter Hubtown, but this time in vengeance. To cleanse the place, much in the way the priest would, because clearly there was nothing to salvage from them, but perhaps where these mole people have come from might harbor some kind of useful technologies. Choose which will these now feature in the scene. Somebody triggers a distant bomb. It gets better.
It's a bit early for that, surely.
Another deactivated atom bomb. Or a mutant tentacle monster. I'm going to raise the stakes with another deactivated
guys,
atom bomb.
Guys, it's in the same place. Yeah. It's just, as he's walking past, he kicks a bit of wood. And we see, as the viewers at home, we see that under the atom bomb, there's another atom bomb.
Atom bombs all the way down. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And it's actually, that was the delivery shaft for the silo underneath the...
The first bomb, yeah, this is the absolute top of, like, an ICBM silo underneath. Like, it's been filled up gradually with rubble over the years. So only the top was protruding, and it was concealed with mounds of scrap. The initial bomb that Nut McKenna nudged and discovered that was the original atom bomb that wasn't discovered because it doesn't know what it is, is just the absolute top tip of the warhead. Inside it is a massive, multi-warheaded ICBM.
We're living in a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland. Almost every other nuclear bomb got fired to create this situation. This one didn't.
And that's where they decided to set some shot.
That is why there is a facility underground that's gradually venting pleasantly warm air. Occasional trickles of probably not harmful steam. It's certainly unlikely to cause severe radiation and mutations.
I'll pass that on to James.
Narrate a scene in which you keep going because you want to kill people without being caught.
Keep sipping your coffee and pass on.
Oh yes, yes. Nut McKenna orders a croissant. Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. A flamethrower sets fire to a vehicle. Sunstroke. Mutant raiders. Flamethrower sets fire to a vehicle.
Yeah, I am having the time of my life.
Am I beautiful now? Am I beautiful now? See me flame! See me flame!
Oh, yeah, you're flaming really good. Love you.
full of those irritating mole people. Yeah! Yeah! Let me fire them! Fire them! See their toasty little bodies and their crispy little skins! Flame!
You set fire to the artillery installation of the mole people, turning the tide of battle back towards the inhabitants of the town.
Entirely accidentally.
Yes.
Past a scientist.
It's a scene in which you keep going because you want to avoid bounty hunters identifying you. Having just eliminated all but the leader of the religious cult, I sneak back to my lab, ready to dye my hair and change my lab. I don't want anyone recognising me from my earlier mass murder.
Clearly the radiation is causing madness in this camera. There's no one sane here.
Naturalistic adventure!
Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. A hitman attempts to strangle somebody, a souped-up weaponized car, or cannibals. So having gone back to my lab, dyed my hair, changed my lab coat, we now encounter a souped-up weaponized car.
In every can of lemonade, you put a tracking device. And now... preparing to pick off the last of them, you get into the car you've been working on for a year. This baby is powerful. And you turn on the tracking device and it just bleeps in the centre of the town.
Yep. You also turn on your fantastic music system. That took 9 of the 12 hours working on the car.
It's got like low lights as well.
Is it low rider?
Yeah, it's low rider.
And so it is that through the chaos of the battle, as a local strangles a mole person on the edge of a building, and there are clearly far more dramatic things happening to far more sane people, you ride through the centre of town, one arm out the window, and in front of you, walking home through the streets is that one member of the cult who turns, sees you in the car, panics and starts running. But you just rev the engine and run them down.
Narrate a scene in which you keep going because you want to find out what's on the robot's locked data drive. So,
I've really been focusing on the robot.
I haven't really. Well, I've still got it on a leash. And then Snappy's been like, see me flame! See me flame! Ah, beautiful colours! See the beautiful colours of flesh and burning! Ah, the reds! Ah, the blacks! Ah, the ashes! Ah! And then behind me, the robot says, oh, would you require a wake-up call in the morning? Oh, like, will you shut up, robot? Will you shut up? Why do I even have you here? So I wonder, I'm flaming as I go, absent-mindedly, though. Absent-mindedly setting fire to everything. I look around for a scientist who could help me with this problem. Choose which one of these will now feature the scene. Desperate survivors rush somebody for supplies, a hitman or cannibals. I've gone for... So explain to me how, as I'm looking for a scientist with a screaming flamethrower shotgun tugging a domestic appliance bot, cannibals
well,
get involved.
Well, I feel like you... I feel like it's very obvious. I feel like you think the same. So suddenly, long-forgotten klaxons begin echoing out across Hubtown. As the vibrations and all of the action and all of the noise has slowly begun to dislodge things upon the cavernous hive that has been the ICBM silo beneath Hubtown. So, slowly, entirely unknown of trapdoor beneath the very centre of Hubtown begins to open, revealing hordes and hordes of cannibalistic marines wearing what's left of their uniforms who've been eking out what time they have in the ICBM silo. Once their emergency rations ran out, they began eating themselves from lowest rank to highest rank. And they've burst out because now there's only the officers left and they're not going to get themselves eaten. And so they break out with weapons which, whilst well-maintained, are still incredibly ancient, and jamming one out of every two shots, they began to sweep across the already plagued city.
The mole people and the townsfolk, recognising this shared threat, temporarily lay aside their differences.
I think as it is, though, these cannibal people are emaciated, severely malnourished, and using inferior weapons.
I didn't say it would take long to eliminate this threat.
And there are not many. they all, the guy who's strangling the mole person, they both turn, chew a cannibal, high five, and go back to the And it's just a surreal little coda.
Yeah. And I reckon it's worth taking a break there, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello? Hello? Oh, I sit there. And talking to this? This? Right. Good. That is odd. Yes. And you, bring me a whiskey. With a rum in it. Yeah, lovely. Yes, so, good evening, peasants. I am Sir Bertrand MacGuffingham. Now, I've been told the tales of my feats of heroism, adventure, and utterly selfless derring-do were spreading far and wide, arcing across the sky like lightning, rending the heavens in twain with their magnitude and ploughing into people's ears like a plough made of me being splendid. Now, the important thing is that I'm excellent, and everyone should know just how excellent I am. So in order to set yet more ears aquiver in anticipation of my every exploit, I would like you, specifically you, to tell your friends about how utterly super I am. Now, according to the technical busybods of Rusty Quill, and trust me, their bods are very busy, if you tell a friend about us and they subscribe to my tales of chivalric daring, then when they send us an email to mail@rustyquill.com with their name and the person who recommended it, they will have an episode dedicated to them. Now, I've no idea what that means, but it sounds jolly lovely. Anyway, once you've done all of that, all you need to do is pop the cash in non-consecutive bills into an envelope and send it along... What? What? What do you mean they don't have to pay? Oh, I am literally never... Don't! Oh, you test me, sir! Fine, fine, fine!
Fine, well, recommend us to your friends and don't pay us and you still get your own episode. Now, if you'd excuse me, I have to have a serious chat with the underlings about the actual meaning of the word mercenary.
And welcome back. So, let's pick up where we left off. I believe it's your turn, Ed.
It is, and I've got a screen here that says, narrate a final unfortunate scene in which you attempt to resolve your problems, but fail in a truly unfortunate way. Just so you know, everyone will get a random first screen here about how successful you are. So, currently bleeding out on the floor, having been shot in the heart, Regina raises her staff and says to the people gathered, a martyr, and then die. And the people around her look, and for a moment there's a twinkling in their eye, and then they go back to shopping. She was nuts, wasn't she? But as she lies dead in the middle of the square, which of these will now appear? A hitman arrives with a bloody big gun, mole people drag somebody underground, somebody passes out from sunstroke and wakes up in a better place.
All of those are possible at this point.
Yeah.
Mole people possibly.
They're all vile.
Oh, the mole people makes a lot of sense. So, mole people drag someone underground.
The mole people hearing Regina's cry from the town square pick up their ears and go, Regina, the tech shaman, and scrabble for her body in order to preserve it for holy relics.
All the shoppers are like they stumble over the moles. The violence hasn't really got to this area yet, so they're just a bit like, oh.
This is the safe zone.
This is the marketplace where the bombs are.
Who are all of these small furry people? It's not that unusual. There is a lot of radiation around. Like, oh, well, there's quite a lot of them. Shrug, turn around.
Narrate a climactic scene in which you struggle against a powerful opposition. The cult leader, in his three-piece, which he's sewing on the fly because all gentlemen carry a sewing kit because it doesn't do to have tears whilst you're walking, starts making his way back down the holes that the mole people first came out of, and he heads down and reconsiders the fact that the tech shaman swore there was an underground city, and as he goes, finds the first gatekeepers of mole people outside a sealed cavern and just goes, I think I could convince you that what you really need is an automated house robot to clean things up. I think that that kind of thing is really what you're after. And the cult leader proceeds to desperately try to convince them that his way of life, which is completely incompatible with theirs in literally every way, is the way to go. No, you don't know what a souffle is, but trust me, you can base a civilization model upon it. Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. The flamethrower sets fire to a person. Mole people drag somebody underground. Somebody passes out from sunstroke and wakes up in a better place. If only I was still above ground. Nonetheless, I'm going to go with mole people drag somebody underground. It feels coherent, if nothing else.
Mole people do not listen to your persuasion, but they decide that you also will make a good sacrifice to their now dead prophets.
Their deified prophets.
And the scientist is cruising around upside in his pimped out weapon car, sees a ramp begin to emerge in the street, like it just turns out.
That's how the artillery vehicle came up from the mole kingdom.
So, and down there he can hear his dreaded rival trying to convince people about
the righteousness of souffle,
the thing you hate the most. You're considering whether to go down yourself and just run him over, but the mole people made that decision for you. And grappling hooks.
They want my super weaponized car.
Yeah.
They're trying to claim it for themselves.
They want that sweet base.
No.
Narrate a final scene in which you try to fix everything only to have your efforts backfire. I'm trying. My goal is to kill lots of people. That is my aim. I don't think that the clock is ticking down properly. I go over to try and fix it. And I break the bomb. It stopped working. And I get a small electric shock to my hand. I can't feel it, but I do, and it hurts.
You can see the sparks.
I know, yeah, and it chars a bit, and it smells even. It smells like toasted almonds for a change, which is a nice change. And I just look down at my horrendous hand grasping this bomb. And I look around at the people surrounding me, and I hear the explosions in the distance. And I look around at the people, and I look down at my horrendous, hideous hand. I look at the people again, and I look down at my horrendous, hideous hand. I look at the people, and there's a child playing what might be considered a puppy. I look down at my hideous hand. I look again, and there's a baby's smiling face. I look down at my hand, and I wonder, am I one of the bad guys? Choose which of these features will now feature in the scene. The religious cult tries to eliminate the heathens. A weaponized car is involved in an awesome chase. Somebody passes out from sunstroke and wakes up in a better place. I am going to choose somebody passes out from sunstroke and wakes up in a better place. So the mutant has had this horrific moment of self-realization, this shattering personal epiphany.
He's been standing there for so long that you know that you have to stay in the shade because all the tumours work as insulation.
Yeah, it's all those layers.
So just standing there with these rolls of tumour tissue, you begin to overheat really very quickly.
So as the sunstroke takes McKenna and he collapses into darkness, he slowly, eventually claws his way back to consciousness and comes to staring at a bright light, but it's not the sun, it's halogen. Who has a halogen, right? And then he sits up and finds himself in a hospital bed. And significant numbers of his tumours have been removed and replaced with skin grafts. And then he looks to his right and sees what's left of the retreating Marines have taken him back with them as a food source.
Oh.
And as they munch on tuna sandwiches, you have saved them from their cannibalistic tendencies.
Oh. How is that saving them from cannibalistic tendencies?
This is awful.
Because they'll never need any other types.
Oh, because even now, as you lie strapped to a bed, more tumours are growing. Oh.
That's not in the long term a sustainable food source. I should point that out.
But they're not thinking clearly because it's so delicious. All they do is they're so happy with you. They offer you a place.
We
not only as their partner and food source, but as their leader. What?
Yeah.
This is awful.
Great.
You are an awful person.
You're horrible.
It's I work with what I give temporarily.
And as the leader, they hand you the suitcase that contains the big red button.
Yeah, which you have no idea what it does.
And the lights gradually dim on this scene as Nut McKenna gradually flops forward ambiguously towards the suitcase.
Ambiguously.
Gradually fades as that happens.
Narrate a final scene in which you win the day, but lose something important to you in the struggle.
Oh.
The grappling hooks have attached to my car and they're dragging it down into the kingdom of the mole people, but I know there's only one of my enemies left. So I let the mole people drag the car down, but as they lock it into place, I roll out of the car, clicking in my night vision goggles and coming up dual-wielding my dart guns, hands filled with snake venom, and I lay waste all around me. I've decided I'm not having any part of this conflict. I'm not on anyone's side. And I make sure I get a venom dart straight in the cult leader's head, take down all the mole people surrounding me too, leave behind my car and all the prized and valuable possessions I have in it.
Is your bounty bar in the car?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
Because it falls out of your pocket as you're climbing out, and it's only when you get out.
And all that will be left to me is the clothes on my back, the goggles on my face, and the guns in my hand.
Nice.
Choose which of these will now feature in the scene. A bomb goes off, an artillery gang arrives and razes a building to the ground, or somebody discovers a deactivated bomb and panics, which seems like a good way to conclude our penultimate scene.
Oh, yeah.
So someone finally discovers a deactivated bomb.
As you are climbing out, you emerge to the surface, pull yourself into the town square, and then see the two deactivated atom bombs sitting there. And you recognise the symbol. You run over to them, panicking. You throw open the panel on the side and start mashing buttons, trying to disarm them. And then you look up and it says, deactivated. And you great. But then you realise that's what it said in the first place. And then it says, activated. And starts a countdown timer for 3 minutes.
Pass it to the
I feel like we've made increase. The world's first nuclear farce. This is a genre that has legs, people.
Lots of brains.
So many.
Yeah, I think Dr. Strange would have something to say about it. Okay. narrate a climactic scene in which you overcome all opposition with spectacular success to an immense degree of luck and skill. Probably is it like, she doesn't want anything that makes sense, so Locke stumbles around, completely unaware of what's going on. Fire, the robot is just like, would you like me to fix the heating? Would you please stop burning everything? Like, what? Can you say something that makes sense? I'm purifying! Look at me burn! Shoot that man in the head! Flamed him first! Toasty bullet riddled hole! Yeah! I'm stumbling around. The robot just like, okay, a break! Like, please, this is not okay! Just the plans to the city that's underneath it!
Can you have Locke now just drop it all and start acting entirely normally? She was just doing it
to the best interrogation ever.
Wait, that makes sense. Why are you, it was a plan, there's a city under here? No, well, not a city, it's more of a, there's a missile silo. And you see, the bombs have been activated and my programming that was encrypted has now switched itself on so that I am now a manifestation of the computer. I am supposed to turn the bomb off.
That sounds really complicated.
See me burn! Burn! Why are you talking? I want to burn!
And so I don't really understand. What is it? You got to let me off the leash so that I can go and deactivate the bomb. Otherwise, we're all going to die.
So now choose which of these will now feature in the scene. The desperate survivors weaponize an attack. Somebody discovers a deactivated atom bomb and panics. Or two drivers play chicken. Right, well, they are also trying to discover the deactivated bomb and panicking.
The scientist has just accidentally activated the nuclear bomb, rearming it and setting the countdown for 3 minutes. He is desperately trying to undo his work when, about 30 seconds into the 3 minute countdown, up wanders the gun toting priest led by the robot.
The flamethrower is still on, yeah. By the way.
Well, just constantly. It's not like bursts, it's just.
Yeah. Yes.
All of the time.
Yes.
The robot says, let me aside! I know how to deactivate the bomb!
At which point, Locke, discovering the atom bomb and panicking, starts shooting wildly in the vain attempt at disarming the bomb, with flames flying everywhere and the ironically named Blaze getting out of dodge. All that's left is Locke Coil staring at a bomb, flames shooting from a gun that's screaming to blow everything up, with a robot on the other head screaming, no, turn it off. And then what Locke does is just aims right at the middle of the timer and just unloads, Point Break style.
So, the timer is destroyed, the countdown is invisible, but there's still just this fate.
In the game, there is one final round where we each do a sentence.
All right. Pass to the tech show.
So it's just a sentence. So deep in the bowels of the base, the mole people hang the body of Regina on a cross, and anoint her skin. She's hung on the bottom of the atom bomb as it begins to rumble and the jets thrusting it into the air.
So, the cult leader, venom coursing through his veins, slightly out of it, finds himself in a lovely little domestic kitchen, and he puts all the ingredients for the souffle, and he turns the oven on, and then stands there, holding his arms open as the heat, he can feel the heat of it across his face as the flames from the rocket, which is just setting off, only feet in front of him, begin to warm his face, and he goes, finally, I'm happy!
As Nut McKenna slumps forward towards the big red button, his descent is halted by the tension in his spine, thwarted, he simply presses the button. Another injection of morphine. We fade to black.
Oh, God. This is dark.
Yeah, that's grim.
As
better place.
As the double-cored atom bomb starts to rise in front of him out of the silo in the centre of the market square. Flash Blaze leaps onto it. One last desperate attempt to pull out the detonator before the bomb can go off. He hangs on desperately with one hand as the bomb rises into the air, leaving the scorched ground beneath it. He just pulls at the wiring, hoping if he can disconnect the nuclear material, at the very least, the apocalypse won't get worse.
Locke is quite stunned to see her shooting has not stopped from rising through the ground. But Snappy has something to say.
I want it! I want it! I want you to attach it to me! What flame? No, I don't want flame! I want an atom bomb! Strap me to the atom bomb!
So she also jumps on and gets out the some of the handy screwdrivers that are attached to the many, many belts. Starts basically attacking any little panel that she can, trying to open something up so that she can strap Snappy to it so that he can be one with the atom bomb. It turns out that one of those panels may be, entirely coincidentally, the detonator bit. She's tearing and she's pulling, and she manages to, like, to get wires that strap it to Snappy's trigger. I'm whole! The gun screams. I'm whole! The robot is dangling behind them on leash still. But the detonator has been pulled out. And so in her final ride with Snappy and the robot, Lockwell has a fantastic, beautiful moment of completion.
So the atom bomb
didn't go off.
It landed undetonated after an incredibly long and cold journey from everyone holding onto it.
And the town is left.
It's like two people. After the whole people at the
cannibals. Someone just opens the door, steps out for his newspaper and goes, whoa. What happened this morning?
The only person left is the leader of the town.
He started this by
trying to get a hitman to take out that one
guy.
So there's just
the leader of the town holding an egg with all of these rats going, we will rebuild.
The end.
Okay, wow, that was, yes, that was a heck of a fun time. I think we're going to have to wrap up there. And yeah, thank you, Ed, for bringing that. That was great.
Amazing,
that was good
stuff.
Fun.
I'm going to spend every Sunday now pretending I'm here with you guys.
So what was the name of it again, just for the listeners?
Story Jam. You can find it at storyjam.co.uk.
Yeah, check that out, because we definitely will be. And we're going to be doing lots of extra special episodes in the future. But for now, thanks for listening, and we hope you carry on listening for more.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.